Her latest is the mystery novel based in the Bay Area titled Ripper. Her books have been translated into 35 languages, have sold close to 60 million copies around the world. You can go to our website at democracynow.org to watch all of our interviews with Isabel Allende. Democracy Now! Is produced by Mike Burke, Renee Feltz, Aaron Maté, Nermeen Sheikh, Steve Martinez, Sam Alkoff, Hani Massoud, Rabbi Karen, Dina Guzder, Amy Littlefield, Daniel Begun, Anna Uzbek, and Sam Riddell. Mike DeFilippo and Miguel Nogueira are engineers. Special thanks to Becca Staley, Julie Crosby, Hugh Grant, Jessica Lee, David Prude, and Vesta Gadars, and our camera crew, John Randolph, Kieran Craig Meadows, Carla DeJesus, and Phil Raymond. I'm Amy Goodman. Our website, democracynow.org.
You're listening to WHFR Dearborn, live from Henry Ford College. It's Friday, Black Friday, November the 28th, 2014. And now it's time for our public affairs show, and we call it the new WHFR Journal. Well, hello and welcome to another edition of the new WHFR Journal. That's why it's new, because it's not the same as last week. My name is Jay Koronek. Happy to be with you today. I'm station advisor here at WHFR-FM and also host of this show. Today, there's no special guest, just me, although I think I'm pretty special. And my news director, John Conroy, won't be with me either today because he's taking a little vacation time off probably for the next month. And good for him. So, to jump into the stories about Dearborn and the surrounding area. No person here to hand me the newspapers. Just reviewing the newspapers, first of all, there's several bigger stories that I'd like to cover too, but or always like to cover the papers. Again, you should subscribe if you live in Dearborn or even nearby. Subscribe to the Dearborn Press and Guide or the Dearborn Times Herald or both weekly. You need to support those print newspapers because, remember, they give you a lot more information than I can or anyone else in great detail about the local area. Much greater detail than you'll get certainly on any commercial media, because even in this southeast Detroit area, the commercial media don't talk very much about individual little cities. A little city like Dearborn, which is 100,000 people, unless there's a crisis, something blows up or a fire or something, we don't get mentioned. So that's why we're here, and we're here for you, and we are live today, not a pre-recorded show, because we believe in doing things a little differently than the other commercial stations. But if you are out and about, be careful. Watch your driving. A lot of people perhaps still pushing and shoving. Remember that today, it's too late to tell you. Oh, yeah, now he tells me at 1 o'clock in the afternoon. Today is National Buy Nothing Day. So here in the U.S., it's Buy Nothing Day. Internationally, the holiday is tomorrow. And there's a long story about that, but I won't go into it. This was started by a nonprofit group in Vancouver, British Columbia. And the group is called Adbusters. And they don't believe that we should live a heavily commercialized life, that we should always be buying, especially things that we don't need. And so they came up with this idea, I think probably about 20 years ago or more now, but it hasn't spread, even though people know about it worldwide. Actually, just like many of these holidays, opinion of yours truly, remember all opinions on the show today especially are mine only, not necessarily those of anyone else here at Henry Ford College. But we thank them for allowing us to speak our opinions as long as we can be responsible at the same time. Is that possible? Yes, I think so. And that is that, Valentine's Day should be every day of the year. Okay. The meaning of Christmas should be every day of the year, if I understand the Christian holiday. Mother's Day, Father's Day, those should be commingled and celebrated every day of the year, along with Grandparents' Day and Sweetest Day. You know, there's no reason we should just do it one day a year and then forget about it. And that's the problem of modern life, is that we forget about paying thanks, giving gratitude to all those around us that we relate to, and sometimes intimately. So best efforts out there. Best wishes, of course, from yours truly. Anyway, tomorrow, though, and there's a story coming up later, and there's some commentary about it, so I will bring that up later on. Tomorrow is Buy Local Day, or Small Business Day, if you will, and we'll talk about that briefly. Monday, of course, they call Cyber Monday. Supposedly, you do your internet shopping. I know a lot of people, including me, have done their shopping already, mostly online. And one of the reasons for that is that there's better selection and better prices. And of course, it does save a little bit of energy, although not the energy of the package delivery people. But it gives a lot of extra people work at the holidays for UPS and FedEx. And even perhaps they bring on some part-time help at the U.S. Post Office, who knows, to help with package delivery. Okay. Looking at the Dearborn Press and Guide from last Sunday, ArtSpace is near closing on Old City Hall. They made an offer to buy, signed a purchase agreement, and closing is when it becomes official. Let me grab the paper over here on the other side of the room. Okay. And the statement at the bottom of the first page is that... this is from Heidi Kurtz, who's Vice President of Property Development for ArtSpace. Again, of course, ArtSpace, if you haven't kept up, folks, or you're just listening to the show for the first time, or you never heard about this before, even though it's been going on for 3 or 4 years now, this discussion, ArtSpace will be transforming what was once Dearborn City Hall. That's right. Didn't hear about that one either? Yeah. Dearborn City Hall is, the location of Dearborn City Hall has moved to a new city hall that they call it Dearborn Administrative Center, and it's more in the middle of Dearborn rather than on the east side of Dearborn now. And so they're pretty much out of there, I think. They sold off old furniture, I think, last week, and they're pretty much out of the building. So anyway, according to Heidi Kurtz of ArtSpace, she says we plan to be closing and starting construction the first week of December. Well, that begins on Monday, so... Okay, so, and it goes into some details here, what they're going to be doing. It says, once the ink dries on the paperwork, once the deal becomes totally final, continued on page 3, keeping you in suspension here, the ball will be set in motion. I wonder if that means a wrecking ball. I guess it does. The quote is from Kurtz, you should start to see trailers on site and demolition teams in place by the middle of December. The goal is to, within a year, convert the space into 53 units of affordable artist live work housing that includes a community room, corridor art galleries, and an outdoor patio, as well as a community building that includes artist work studios, an artist in residence unit, community classroom space, and office and incubator space. And they don't incubate little chickies, I don't think. I'm not sure what the artist definition of incubator space would be, but incubator space, the space where things begin growing. Okay. Would that be statues or painting? Anyway, again, probably they're not hatching eggs. Nonetheless, that's what it says here, and it's all very exciting. Okay, and they say it will all become a dynamic creative community. And the project will be costing almost $17 million. It'll be the first live work art space project in Michigan, but it is the 38th art space project in the country. So they kind of know how to do it, supposedly. We'll find out. If you want to, as an artist, be part of that special community, initial application period expected to begin in August 2015. And residents will move in around next November 2015. So you've got a few months to plan whether or not you want to set up there and move there. It says those interested in more information can sign up for project updates at artspace.org, which is their website. Okay. All righty. So that's over and done with. So the whole issue about, well, the old City Hall, what if they don't buy it? What do we do? It looks like they will be buying it. They will be signing the agreement. I guess they have the money from a variety of sources, as they usually do when they get into these things. Nonprofits buy things. And there you go. Op-ed. Craig Foran says, Thanksgiving is the best and worst of times. Okay, that's on page 4A. Of course, this was a comment before Thanksgiving. But here's what he has to say about yesterday and this holiday period that's begun here. He says, with Halloween election day out of the way, up next is my favorite time of the year. No, not putting up the tree, although that's great. Thanksgiving. Specifically, the special ritual my wife and I have developed over the years about making turkey dinner for what seems a cast of thousands, and which starts the night before and carries over to the early hours of the next morning. My role as sous chef is well known in the family. I chop, slice, and dice and prep everything while she performs her magic. I prep, she prepares. I clean up, she tosses pots, pans, spoons, and spatulas my way. I keep our kitchen an efficient running engine of food production. She makes everything mouth-watering. It's a special time for us, one of those subtle pleasures of marriage. And did I add extra stress to the word subtle? I think I want to. Anyway, he goes on to say, but there's another side of Thanksgiving that just rubs me the wrong way. I mean, okay, you're not marketing to me. He's an older person. I don't fit your demographic. I also know that I'm part of a very small, but I think growing group who thinks this way. We're the outliers. Still, this is the only place I can even say it, where it might have the slightest effect, even though in my heart I know it won't. So here goes. To the retailers, Walmart, Target, Macy's, Sears, Kmart, JCPenney, Kohl's, Staples, and Toys R Us, I think you should just stay closed on Thanksgiving. There, I said it, or wrote it, and the world didn't spin off its axis, Wall Street didn't crash, and little Timmy and little Sue probably won't be denied a darn thing this Christmas. Yes, I've long understood the fun with Black Friday from a consumer's perspective. Get out there before the break of dawn with other shoppers to get a jump on the special deals. Yep, there's a certain circus atmosphere that takes hold during such moments, a Wild West mentality in which the tough really do go shopping. But where such shoppers used to wait until the crack of dawn on Friday to enter their favorite stores, we watch that door open a little earlier each year until it's crept completely into the day before. And I don't like it. Like I said, though, I know you're not marketing to me. Again, this is Craig Foran talking. Since there's no way I'd leave my home on Thanksgiving Day to go shopping for Christmas. So you can paper my whole house with your circulars urging me to forego turkey and come on over, but it's not going to happen. With that in mind, it's heartening to hear that some retailers have realized that maybe, just maybe, Black Friday doesn't have to begin on Thanksgiving Day. Actually, some retailers, Craig, you probably are aware by now, they started Black Friday as a week this last Monday. And they were promoting Black Friday sales for the whole week. Whether or not they're open on Thanksgiving is another issue. Apparently, he goes on to say, you can put Dillard's and the parent company of TJ Maxx, Marshalls, and Home Goods on that list. They're staying closed on Thanksgiving so their workers can enjoy the holiday with family. Likewise, GameStop and Barnes & Noble, both of which certainly would make money selling toys, games, and books an extra day, will remain dark until it's still dark the next morning. He said, now, I don't begrudge a company making a profit, but this Black Friday escalation has gotten so ridiculous that even the most hardened cynic about early Christmas shopping is shedding tears of frustration. It's bad enough when Christmas decorations appear next to Halloween candy. Is there no shame anymore, he asks. But do we have to completely blur the line between doorbusters and gut-busting? I mean, it's one day. So I won't finish, but that's the gist of his comment. He's kind of a Scrooge on shopping. Not on Thanksgiving, but a Scrooge on shopping on Thanksgiving. Personally, yours truly, even an older school than Craig Foran, what about Sundays? Shouldn't we, except for vital essentials, and sometimes it does mean food, sometimes it does mean drugs, so maybe food and drug stores, maybe not Meijer, therefore, or only the food and drug section inside Meijer's and Walmart's, are closed. Even on Sundays, okay, the day of rest thing. But the big point I think he's making, which he doesn't directly say, is why not be together? I think he does directly say somewhere in there, at least once. It's a time of giving thanks with the whole family. Okay, it's not just stuffing your face with food, but it's a time to give thanks, to say hello, and then later goodbye, to the family. And, you know, we don't get together enough anymore that way. And it's a day to keep it sort of pure. And what I mean by that, anyway, is without the necessity to buy something. It's sort of like right now, a lot of people are apparently addicted to using their cell phones and their tablets and their computers. I mean, really addicted. They can't live without it, apparently, because they certainly choose not to. It was interesting that at some get-togethers I've heard for Thanksgiving, they want you to check your cell phones and your tablets at the door, or make sure you turn them off, just like when you go into a movie theater. it's a no-cell zone. It's a no-internet zone. One way to really get to them is to turn off the Wi-Fi for your house. You know, if you have it, you know, wireless Wi-Fi in your house, turn it off. That'll just really freak them out for those that use tablets that need it. But seriously, I don't think it's good to be addicted to anything. You need to be able to choose the special moments, devote all your attention, and then go on to something else. And say, well, humans can multitask. No, we can't. It's been proven. We can't do it very well. Oh, we can do more than one thing at the same time, but not very well. It takes longer. And we don't concentrate as much about what we're doing, so we make more mistakes. I mean, tests have proven this. They've proven this for the last 10 years. You know, college professors have to do something to maintain their professorship, and so they get grant money, and they test these things. And even the smart young people who think they're so great at multitasking, you can't. And we're not just talking about driving and texting or driving and talking on the phone, but you can't do it so well. And so therefore, guess what? You shouldn't. I had a teacher back in elementary school I know that used to say, I make a habit of not using the radio that came with my car. When I'm driving, I don't have the radio on. Why? Because I don't want it to distract me in my mind from what I'm doing, which is trying to drive the car safely for myself and for others. Kind of interesting. We've kind of given up on that idea. There's almost always radio or music going in a car now. And I don't know if studies show these days that that's quite as dangerous as it used to be. But talking on the phone, oh yeah, that interactive stuff. And certainly texting, where you got to look down at the little screen while you're doing it. Well, of course, no, not when you're driving. Okay, so no multitasking, folks. A word to the wise. A good New Year's resolution, but make it and do it now. And also, watch out for those addictions. Yeah, all kinds. I don't mean the dangerous drugs necessarily, but these things about addiction to computer use, electronic device use, and, of course, the addiction to buying. We can't be happy unless we're buying something. Well, how many times, really, be honest with yourself here. I'll get off my soapbox in a second. But, you know, how many times is it really that great after you buy it? Well, very rarely, which means what? Well, you got to go and buy something else. Either something else like it or something else totally different because you got to get your fix. I bought something and I'm a better person for it. Now, I realize that it may be a metaphor if we have any sort of genetic memory of when we were back in caveman days and the big hunt was for food every day. Or gathering crops a little bit later. You know, somebody had to go and harvest. They had to pick the corn. They had to harvest the wheat or whatever. So you had to go out and scavenge for food one place or the other. And maybe since we don't get food that way, oh, yeah, we go to restaurants. We buy food in the stores. But it's relatively convenient. We usually have money enough to buy food or to eat out. And we don't have to prepare anything. So we're not putting anything out there. We sort of grab it, pay for it. You know, it's not like really hunting, but shopping. Oh, that's like hunting. Got to survey the whole area. You got to pick your locations very carefully and then run like heck to make sure you get the product before they're all sold out. And this is even on days other than Thanksgiving. Well, that's just crazy. Now, of course, you can do the same thing. You can hunt for a good buy on the internet. And there, you even have more crazy choices and more variety of prices, which is almost too confusing. It's almost information overload for the human mind. So watch out for those addictions, okay? And especially we're talking about buying things you don't necessarily need, even if it's like to give to somebody else. By the way, do they really need it? Or is it just the best you could find? If you don't really know them well enough to know what they need, then maybe you shouldn't buy them a gift at all. Shake their hand, give them a hug. I mean, I'm just saying, think about it. Here's Jim Hightower. As I continue turning pages here on the new WHFR Journal, WHFR.fm, the station making waves. We're live today on Black Friday. Here's a couple comments from Jim Hightower about Thanksgiving in our country. Whoops, I just covered up the controls here. All right. Listen up, folks.
Thanksgiving, a time of grace and family sharing, will get an extra bit of grace from the White House this year. Just as every president since Lincoln has done, Barack Obama will grant clemency to two turkeys that otherwise could have become the main entree for the first family's holiday dinner. This traditional presidential pardon of the gobblers provides a bit of good PR for the National Turkey Federation, the lobbying group that arranges for one of its members to supply the birds. Therein lies this year's extra touch of grace. Obama will be pardoning hardcore Republican turkeys. Well, fowls themselves probably aren't political, beyond being anti-hatchetism. But even if turkeys had tried to vote in the November elections, they would have faced the voter ID laws that GOP officials have imposed. Those laws were meant to repress the Democratic vote, but I think they would have repressed the turkey vote, too. However, guess who did vote Republican in the midterms? The Turkey Industry Lobbying Group, plus the very corporate farm that shipped the two birds to Obama, voted with their dollars. The Federation fed nearly $160,000 into this year's anti-Obama congressional candidates, and Cooper Farms of Ohio chipped in more than $46,000 to GOP candidates, plus some $66,000 to the Federation's Republican electioneering effort. Cooper Farms had also donated to the GOP's failed effort in 2008 and again in 2012 to defeat Obama himself. This is Jim Hightower saying, yet the Democrat in the White House will shun the chance for partisan retribution, making a unilateral executive decision to spare the lives of the two Republican turkeys. No doubt this will cause the GOP Speaker of the House, John Boehner of Ohio, to sue Obama once again for executive overreach, this time for sparing turkeys without congressional permission. Everyone from the Obama family in the White House to my little family in Texas will take a deserved pause from the unrelenting intensity of work on Thanksgiving Day. But millions will not get a work pause. Such workers as firefighters, police, and hospital workers must stay on the job, but they're providing essential services for our society. Yet Walmart, Target, Macy's, Radio Shack, and other retailers are also requiring their low-paid workers to report. Why? What's essential about buying gewgaws, gizmos, or garments from these mass marketers of consumer excess that justifies them forcing employees to give up this family day of Thanksgiving? Retail giants already exploit the day after Thanksgiving, which they've dubbed Black Friday, for an orgy of commercialism. Yet that's not enough to satisfy soulless profiteers, so they've moved their Black Friday start back into Thursday, during the family mealtime of Thanksgiving Day itself. Some are even opening their doors at 6 a.m. on Thursday, essentially wiping out this day of family grace for every employee they require to be at work. A mall outside of Buffalo has gone even more extreme, requiring its 200-plus stores to open on Thanksgiving Day or pay a $200 an hour fine. This is what Pope Francis recently condemned as unbridled consumerism. Yet a Walmart PR flack claims to be doing consumers a favor by staying open on a spiritual day to, quote, provide what consumers need. This is Jim Hightower saying, bovine excrement. Walmart has nothing that needs to be bought on a holiday, and any of the stuff it sells can be bought the very next day from Costco, Crate & Barrel, Barnes & Noble, Dillard's, Nordstrom's, Patagonia, and other stores that respect their employees and America's values by closing on Thanksgiving Day.
Some pretty good ideas there. It's our favorite national, internationally known populist, Jim Hightower. Remember Ralph Nader, when asked a year or two ago, I said, going to run for president again, Ralph, like on the Green Party? He said, nope. But I recommend Jim Hightower. That's what he said. I think that's a great thing to be recommended as a presidential timber by Ralph Nader. Anyway, that's my personal feeling. I've interviewed Ralph, met him several times, and try to listen to him whenever I can. He does have a podcast, by the way, now, or sort of a radio program for an hour somewhere, I think in California. He usually phones in his part of it, but there's a couple of hosts, and they ask him questions about things that happened during last week. And wow, does this guy know a lot? He really does, folks. I mean, you know, you don't have to agree with his opinions. Listen to his rationale. Listen to the reasons behind his opinions, because he's got plenty, and he's got the data. He's got the facts. So many that I think his arguments are easily you can accept them. You should be able to once you hear the reasons behind his positions. That's Ralph Nader, but you just heard Jim Hightower. My name is Jay Koronek here on the new WHFR Journal, and we're having great fun here. We're talking about Thanksgiving and the news of the day. Continuing a story that I brought up last week as a correction is the story I had the week before that, which is about the lame duck session, as they call it, in Lansing, Michigan, our state legislature. What were they doing, or what are they doing? Well, all the way through next week and probably the week after, they're passing laws, and probably the governor will sign most of them. Why? Because I say, well, they should wait till January, because then it'll be such a overwhelming Republican majority in the House and Senate that it'll be easy to pass laws. Anything Republicans want, they can get, and probably Snyder will waffle and sign almost everything anyway, even though he's more of a moderate than most of the Republicans. Nonetheless, got to keep up that Republican front, you know. Well, you say you're Republican, but why don't you sign the bill? But in fact, even the Republicans know that in January, they're going to have a lot more so-called Tea Partiers, the people that are even more conservative than most of the Republicans that are there now. And the Tea Partiers, one characteristic, which is very strange, is no more taxes, no more money spent anywhere on anything. And very few exceptions among the people who say they're Tea Partiers. We don't need government to do anything. How are you going to fix the roads? Come on. Really. You know, that's a statewide issue. How are you going to keep the water in our lakes, in our rivers, from being polluted? You can't do that on an individual city-by-city, township-by-township basis. You can't. At each level of government, there are some services that government must provide, or we're all in a lot of trouble. And one is infrastructure, our roads. So that's why the lame duck session is trying to get some things through. But the issue that caught my attention, and I was in favor of it 3 weeks ago on the air here, and I'm sorry about that, because I was wrong. I was wrong. Often I am. Okay, that there's a bill in the House, and in fact, in a letter to the editor in last Sunday's Dearborn Press and Guide from the League of Women Voters, Dearborn Heights. You got to respect them, right? Because they know whereof they talk. It's a bill number in the House, HB 5974, that will change Michigan voting in electoral colleges. And the electoral college, that is to elect the President of the United States in 2016. So it's a proportionate vote. So it's not, if the popular vote in Michigan goes, let's say, to the Republican candidate, then they get all of Michigan's electoral vote, 16 or 17, in the Electoral College, You know, bigger states, more population, more districts, approximately the same population in every district all across the U.S. Okay, that's the way that idea originally started. So the big states have a lot more electoral votes. But here in Michigan, 16 and 17. Well, the proposal is, hey, let's make it proportionate. So let's say there's 17. So that means that somebody that won 55-45, this is what I thought, would get maybe 9, and the other person would get 8. 9 and 8 is 17, if we have 17 for the state. Follow that? I thought, well, that's pretty fair, you know. It's not the popular vote, but it's the next best thing. Well, that's not true, because the districts are gerrymandered. That's what I said last week. It finally dawned on me, and Craig Foran brought it up in his editorial, although not criticizing me, but I was wrong, wrong, wrong. And the League of Women Voters now are also saying that's wrong, wrong, wrong. Why? Because the districts are designed by Republican computers, because they got the right to do the gerrymandering because they were in the majorities when the time came. Every 10 years, that's what happens. And of course, they did a whiz-bang job this time with the help of the computers to make the districts look crazy. I mean, try to look at the lines, the boundaries of the districts. They're drawn so that people who have voted Republican or Democrat, who that's public information, the computer gets it all inputted. And so it draws the lines so that in each, as many districts as possible, there's a slight majority for Republican voters. And then where there's an awful lot of Democrats, oh, they just make sure all those Democrats are all in one district and they overwhelmingly elect Democrats. But all the other districts are kind of close and or, but most all of them will favor Republicans. That's how Republican computers do it. And we all know that if the Democrats were in office when the next redistricting time comes up, they will do the same thing. They'll reverse all the districts to favor Democrats. But the fact right now is, and this is the evil of it, is that you can be, and it's almost happened a couple times in history, certainly it happened in some people's opinions, with George W. Bush. The popular vote, especially if it all would have been allowed to be counted in Florida, would have favored nationally, all put together, Al Gore, the Democrat. But George Bush won the Electoral College votes. Well, that wasn't fair. That wasn't fair. No, of course not. And if we believe that, somebody must start an effort to change our Constitution, sorry, Tea Partiers, so that we elect the president by a popular vote. That's right. We take all the votes cast for President of the United States from all the states. We put them all together, and then we figure out who got the most, and that's the person that becomes the president. And, of course, it was done. That whole procedure was changed for electing senators. U.S. senators originally were not elected that way. And I can't remember how they were, but the popular vote wasn't the final decider. I think then the governor of each state decided who actually won or something like that. Whatever the original U.S. Constitution said about electing senators, it wasn't by popular vote. Because our forefathers, they were kind of suspicious of the masses who aren't well-educated. Today, I'm suspicious of the masses who are educated only by TV commercials. I'm not suspicious. I'm in horror by it, because the amount of learning that they spread around is minuscule. And most of it, in terms of political commercials, is highly exaggerated, highly slanted, which means a few choice facts are mentioned, but the ones that would dispute their argument are left out, or outright lies. And as Truth Squad here in Michigan, out of Bridge, the Bridge magazine in Ann Arbor, Center for Michigan, every major political commercial in Michigan, Democrat and Republican, on radio and TV, committed what they call fraud, some more, some less. In other words, they told lies. They exaggerated so much that it might as well be false. I mean, effectively, it's false. It misleads people. And there's no law against that. It's interesting. We do have laws at the federal level that commercials cannot lie about their products, at least not directly. I mean, there's a certain natural fruit juice on television right now. It's doing a massive campaign because their previous ads, they claimed their product fought cancer. Okay, if you consumed it, you wouldn't get cancer or cancer as much or as badly. And that has never been proven anywhere. Never anywhere. Yes, there's some good things in their juice, some good elements, but never been conclusively proven to prevent cancer or to ameliorate the effects of cancer. So now they just say, hey, we got great stuff in us, healthy stuff. And they just stop there. And they sing and they dance and they've got an animated fruit that their juice is made out of that dances around. But in fact, you certainly get the wrong idea. You know, they got some good stuff in it, but it's not been proven to do anything good for you. So, but they can get away with that. But political commercials, they don't just sing and dance and, you know, jump around. No, they go all the way and spout lies or half lies. White lies? Whatever you want to call it. So, all right. So the League of Women Voters say no, no, no to changing the Electoral College voting system here in Michigan. But if Republicans want it, they got the majorities. They can vote it in, and the governor could sign it. And so all the really unfair gerrymandering of districts, this comes back to haunt us even more. Double trouble, if you will. And how do we prevent the Democrats from doing it if they were in the majority the next time around? Okay, again, fantastic grassroots coalition coming from somewhere. Maybe you, one of you, my loyal listeners, will start it and get friends and spread the word and work hard and making sure as an independent body to split up the districts according to contiguous issues. Oh, it all has to be sort of balanced in population, but you don't skew it so that you go down an alleyway for 40 miles or a business thoroughfare or something to pick up the Republicans. You know, you contiguous territories that have similar issues. And where the chips may fall, they fall in terms of who's more Democrat in one area, who's more Republican. I say, well, but that's just because of where people want to live. And, you know, is that democratic if a whole bunch of people decide to go and move someplace and then they can elect the other party? Yeah, that's democratic. I'm sorry. That's the basic definition. People can live where they want to and they can vote how they want to. And their representatives should represent them from that contiguous area. Okay. Everybody living closely together have similar problems, even if they're of different parties, but they have similar problems in those areas, and collectively they elect and relate to the representative who is from that area too. So it's going to take a lot of work, but right now we have to tell our representatives, and they're still there and they're working on this. I know in this area they're Democrats and they'll be totally against HB 5974. And of course, you know, we have scheduled and we will have on this show on Friday, December 12th, 2 weeks from today, George DeRaney, our local representative from pretty much just the city of Dearborn. We're one of those great districts that, in terms of the state, didn't get gerrymandered. I guess they just gave up on us and said, well, they're going to be Democratic all the time, almost all the time anyway. So we can't do anything. Just give them that contiguous area. Just what the heck? Well, whatever, however it happened. Anyway, George is a representative. He's going to give us a report on the lame duck legislature. It should be finished, and we might be finished in one way more or less when we hear about it. But he'll give us that report, again, 2 weeks from today, December 12th, on this show. Or on the podcast. You can listen, you know, anytime after broadcast from our website, whfr.fm, and click on Talk Shows, Talk Show button in the middle of that homepage, and then click on WHFR Journal, because we got two different talk shows every week, you know, and that we do and that we archive. And one is WHFR Journal, and pick the date. So, moving on. Friends of Detroit River are honoring John Dingell. So many people are honoring him. I'm waiting for the opening of the new train station, which is supposedly going to be somewhere around December 12th. But we don't have an official date announced for that. There'll be a big opening day ceremony for the press. I hope to be there. very exciting time. And I've even got a train trip scheduled for later in the month. Hopefully the brand new building can be the place that I drive up to and take a train out of with my family. So it's going to be very exciting. If it's a new one, if it's the old one, what the heck. But I'm not sure what's slowing up the announcement of that date for the new train station. I guess it's not finished yet. Okay. Moving on here, the new WHFR Journal. Dearborn Times Herald from this week. I just picked up one story from its front page that we haven't already covered elsewhere for you. A lot of good stories in there. It's a good recap of the snow emergency ordinance. We said that's changed here in the city of Dearborn. It does. They have tried to answer the question of people that don't have a driveway, but the snow emergencies, you know, in Dearborn require that you move your car off the streets so their big snow plows can come down relatively quickly and snow your driveway in, you know, plow your driveway in so you can't get through there yourself. Yes, that's ironic. Yes. Somebody said, you're very sarcastic. I think it's ironic, personally, that comment anyway. And I don't like it. I think they plowed far too often when it's not needed in terms of the streets. But nonetheless, I don't have any say over that. The rule is you've got to move your car off the street if they say it's a small emergency day because you heard the sirens or you got an email. And so if you're deaf or you don't do that email thing, you're going to get a ticket, and a big one, because you didn't move your car. But they now have indicated that in certain areas of the city, are you in the area where they're talking about? Well, they have identified parking lots that you can park in. Hopefully the parking lots will be clear of snow so you can get your car there on the snow emergency day rather than parking in the street. I remember my daughter was living in Dearborn a few years back. She's now moved out of the city. Farewell, Dearborn. Anyway, one of the frustrations for her was she didn't have a driveway in her location down by Oakwood Hospital. And the city said, well, I'll go park at the Board of Education, the so-called Ten Eyck building parking lot. She said, oh, yeah, that's a great answer. That's a whole city block. We're talking like a walk in the snow that would take you 10 minutes once you got your car down there, if you could. You know, and if the lot was plowed, then you got to walk back 10 minutes. And then if it's still snowing or freezing cold, it's going to take you 10 minutes to walk down to get your car. So thank you very much, City of Dearborn. That's one of her frustrations with the city and one of the reasons she moved out. But not all the reasons, not the majority of reasons. Well, I'm not trashing Dearborn here because they're very good with the trash, aren't they? Okay. They pick it up most of the time. Or the people they hire to do it. Anyway, in the Times Herald, there is a nice review of that ordinance. You should read about it. You can also, of course, go to cityofdearborn.org if you do that internet thing and read about the ordinance there and follow the rules, or you're going to get big-time tickets if you don't move that car. Well, Oakwood Hospital, you know, is part of now a new healthcare organization. They've merged with Beaumont and what's the other one? Oh my goodness. Also starts with a B. Well, it's in the article somewhere. Well, anyway, they're all going to be called Beaumont Health Systems, although apparently the buildings in Dearborn, like Oakwood's main hospital in Dearborn, will say Oakwood Hospital. But nonetheless, they're moving the headquarters of Beaumont Health out of Dearborn. So I don't know if it matters much, but they're building a whole new building. Isn't that nice? They can merge and they save so much. Oh, it's Botsford in Farmington. That's the other hospital system that merged. Beaumont, Botsford, and Oakwood Hospitals. In merging, you think, oh, well, they're going to improve services and cut costs. I doubt it. That never usually happens in mergers, except more people get fired and their salary and their salaries get cut and their health care gets cut. Isn't that strange that a health care organization can't give the best possible health care insurance to their employees? No, it'd be too expensive for them. And yet they're part of the problem in that regard. Yeah, there's all these ironies here. Anyway, they're going to move to Southfield with their headquarters. But of course, Oakwood Hospital will still be open. But the parent company is going to do all the administering from Southfield. Yep, I just thought you should know that. And moving to the Dearborn Press and Guide, also from this Wednesday, the 11th, like the Times Herald was, Charter Public School retains top rank in state. And, of course, this comes from, the story comes from the Center for Michigan Policy, or whatever it's called. Anyway, it's a Mackinac organization, or Mackinac Center for Public Policy. There we go. Mackinac Center for Public Policy. They are a conservative think tank. And, yes, that's an oxymoron. You go look it up. Oxymoron. When I say conservative think tank. Even if I said liberal think tank, that would be an oxymoron too. Okay? You can't think freely and critically if at the outset you're going to think one way or the other. You see what I'm saying? You see what I'm saying? Yeah. Anyway, they do a study here every year, and they rate the success in a different way. They evaluate all the schools, public and charter schools, and they claim that the best school in Michigan is a place in Dearborn Heights called Star International Academy, which is a public charter school. And it's rated as the top high school in the state. And they do take into account the fact of the economic background of the population, of the students who attend there, because I guess they're more challenged. So how well do they do, adjusted for the fact that they probably came from a depraved, and to use the West Side Story phrase, depraved on account of their deprived, adjustment. So that's how the Mackinac Center for Public Policy does it. And is Dearborn in the top 10? No, it's not. So number two is International Academy, Bloomfield Hills. And then the City Middle High School in Grand Rapids. But again, and Cesar Chavez High School in Detroit. So a lot of these places, the criteria that the Mackinac Center uses is adjusted for the deprived, I guess, lower economic populations of these schools. So they may not be doing that well academically, but they don't really have to because they got such a handicap coming from those backgrounds, whatever you want to assess them to be. I don't know if that's the way to do it. Obviously, I disagree because they've got so many charter schools up there at the top. And now I switch to, well, I'll keep the paper open for a while. But where is it here? Hang on. Okay, that's well, can't see the story right now in front of me. Well, that's the way it goes. Charter schools are basically I know, it's the Free Press story. That's here somewhere. Yeah. Okay. This is from the Free Press. You know and love the Free Press. Freep.com. Back in October of this year, not too far back, October 29th, they did an actual year-long investigation. Now, this doesn't happen much in the newspapers, that they actually do investigative stories. In other words, they look up the facts for themselves, and they compare them. And they write an objective report, not based on press releases, but based on all the facts that they found. And this took them a year. So they investigated Michigan's charter schools, and this is what they said. They found wasteful spending, conflicts of interest, poor performing schools, and a failure to close the worst of the worst. So here's some big facts about charter schools from the Detroit Free Press. A year-long investigation. Number one, charter schools spent $1 billion per year in state taxpayer money. You know, like that public charter school we just mentioned, Star International Academy. That was public money that went into that charter school. But there's almost no transparency. You don't know how they're spending it. They don't have to tell you. They don't have to tell you because they're charter schools. That's how they're set up by the state of Michigan, by the legislature. Some charter schools, point number two, are innovative, have excellent academic outcomes, but those that don't are allowed to stay open year after year after year. Number three, a majority of the worst-ranked charter schools in Michigan have been open 10 years or more. Four, charter schools as a whole fare no better than traditional schools in educating students in poverty. Okay? So, sorry, Mackinac Center. Next point. Michigan has substantially more for-profit companies running schools than any other state. So they're not, I mean, what's their bottom line? Good results? No, their bottom line is good profits. Well, that makes it suspicious right there. To me. All right. Next point. Michigan is, we already said that. Some charter school board members were forced out. Some charter school board members were forced out after demanding financial details from management companies. Yeah, kick them out. How dare they ask? State law does not prevent insider dealing and self-enrichment by those who operate schools. So weak state oversight allows secrecy and abuses. Well, as they summed up here, after two decades, Michigan has promises to keep, they say, on charter schools. Michigan spends $1 billion on charter schools, but fails to hold them accountable. Okay, so there you go. That's the summary of the findings from the Detroit Free Press after they spent a whole year finding out information and putting it all together. That's the fact. I mean, that's really, those are facts. You rarely get an investigative report from anybody these days. And so excuse me, Mackinac Center, I know you love charter schools. Now, some of these criticisms might hold that, you know, we have some poor performing public schools. But guess what happens? Just like cities that seem to have some financial difficulties, the state of Michigan now has the power through the governor, thanks to the legislature, to go in and say, we're going to take you over. Oh, yeah, you're not in trouble now, but we think you're in trouble or will be soon. So we're going to take you over totally. We're going to run you the way we want to. Forget about your school board members, your elected officials, your principal. We're going to run it how we want to do it. We're going to cut salaries. We're going to fire people, certainly. Because the bottom line is money, of course. And then we're going to give it back to you after we've done that damage. I mean, done all those improvements. Yeah? How are the Detroit Public Schools doing with all their emergency financial managers, huh? How are their educational outcomes doing? Not too well, right? Yeah. And how long have they been under state control? Almost 10 years? I mean, I don't know. I don't remember. It seems like forever. 6 years, 8 years, 10 years. What's the difference? No public accountability to the taxpayers in Detroit for Detroit Public Schools. Why? Because the state runs it through their EAA. And I'm not going to go into details about that, but Jack Lessenberry had a comment back June 24th. You can go to Metro Times and look up Jack Lessenberry, June 24th. Detroit's EAA is totally or fatally flawed. That was his summary opinion about that. You can read the details. And then Detroit Metro Times. They did an investigative report. It goes on. I printed it out for small print, too. 8 pages. About 3,000 words or more. Back in September of this year, September 24th, the EAA exposed an investigative report. And, of course, you know, the governor always says, well, we got too many failing schools. We got to do something about it. And we need to focus on a new way of doing things. So they're going to take over the bottom 5%. Has it worked? No. Has the AAA, which has now been strengthened by the legislature, thank you very much, no thanks. No, it hasn't worked. There's all 8 pages here, 3,000 words. I can't read those 3,000 words to you. If you want to be educated in this, you've got to look at the investigative reports from the unbiased reporters, and there aren't many, but there's a lot of them that do their research. You need to read the research and then tell your elected representatives. Well, this is all, what we're getting from our politicians is largely blowing wind. Can I say that on the radio? Hot air. I can say that. I can say hot air. Okay. They want to sound good, and maybe they have good intentions, but it hasn't worked out. Charter schools in Michigan haven't proven to be much better, and they're much less accountable than public schools. That's what the reports say. I'm looking at them right here. Okay. Not the Mackinac report, because that's an oxymoron report. Okay. Because at the outset, they knew what they were going to say. and they happen to skew their results and come up with criteria, it would happen to prove, well, it doesn't prove anything, of course, but it happens to support what they say about that. So that's a charter school issue and the AA issue. And you heard it here, the new WHFR Journal. But look up the facts if you doubt my word, because I'm telling you things that other people have heavily researched, and they're not biased and they're not prejudiced, and they're, you know, and so you should pay attention to that and then take action based on that. Don't just throw up your hands and be frustrated and say, oh, I don't even care about it. There's nothing I can do. Oh, there's plenty you can do. But you got to start doing it, and you got to start getting together with people that will help you do it. Okay, looking at the Dearborn Press and Guide, gee, we only have 5 or 6 minutes left on the new WHFR Journal. We're expecting, of course, Highway 61 with Joanne Kay to start up at 2 o'clock or so and to go to 6 p.m. today, and that'll be a great show. So you blues lovers tuning in early, yes, it's going to happen. But also in the Press and Guide, let's see, Craig Foran's editorial, he does 2 editorials a week, you know, op-ed, he's not officially sponsored by the paper, he's not speaking for the paper, but they let him speak, and this is his editorial today. He says, do some local shopping on Small Business Saturday. Okay, pull the other story, Kornanek. First of all, I'm not sure where this started, but right now, there's a huge press release I'm looking at that got into the Press and Guide. They didn't write it. It came from American Express. That's a credit card company. Oh, they do some other things, travel and so on, but they make most of their profit from the credit cards. And so I'm thinking that maybe they came up with it, but it's in its 4th year only. And they do recommend that you shop locally tomorrow. That's right, the day after Black Friday is Small Business Saturday. And, you know, it'd be money well spent. Help your community, help these people stay in business, at least through Christmas, by buying something from them. And there are some special deals through certain credit card companies, which will go nameless. I'm not going to do the commercial, but you can probably guess. Otherwise, why would this company issue this? It's actually a 4-page small print press release that went out to the Press and Guide, and they published it verbatim, even though it's a commercial for this credit card company. They could do the story without doing the press release that mentions the credit card company, couldn't they? Sure they could. But then they'd have to write the story themselves, put one word after the other. And they don't have time for that because there's no full-time writers for the Press and Guide or the Times Herald because they can't afford to pay for full-time reporters or do any research or investigation of anything. So that's the situation they got into. So they published the press release, but I'm all in favor of that. And again, why one day a year? Remember what I said at the start of the hour? Sure you do. It should be every day. You should buy from local small merchants all the time. Avoid the chain stores, because you don't need to buy that many chains. Pregnant pause, waiting for the laugh. Okay. And avoid the franchise stores. Now, you say, well, but the franchise stores are owned by local people. You know, in fact, there is a Big Big Coffee, is that what it's called? Franchise, new franchise, locally owned, on the corner of my neighborhood. And my neighborhood would not allow them to rezone slightly to put a drive-thru in there. And so they've been there now a couple of months, and I don't buy coffee. I make it myself. I'm sorry, Big B. But I don't ever see anybody in there. I mean, they got a good location. You can see it in the shopping center. It's a small shopping center, though, so there's not that much business there. And I hope they stay. So I'm not against franchised chain stores if they're locally owned. But sometimes they're owned by somebody that owns 100 franchises in 6 different states, and he doesn't live here. So you're not exactly benefiting anybody that lives here. Although, yes, it gives jobs and work for the people who work in the franchise store, even the chain stores. But consider small businesses. Every day is what I say. One day? Crazy. That's crazy. If it's only for one day. Because they're not going to stay in business if you only shop there one day a year. It won't happen. So, thanks very much for the holiday that allows you to forget about small businesses every other day. I know you physically have to drive there. You have to find them. You have to realize they exist. You can use the internet. You can use Yellow Pages to find those businesses. And you, some of them you probably drive past several times, didn't even know they were there because you weren't looking. You were looking for only the big stores or on your way somewhere really important. And the malls, they get plenty of traffic because they're all side by side and people get in there and they wander around and they got to pass by a whole bunch of stores to get to the one store they really wanted to get to. So, I don't pity the shopping centers that much, but they're falling on hard times too. Fairlane Town Center has changed radically and has a lot of vacant spaces. It's because people can't make a go of it. 2 minutes to go. Tom Watkins in the Dearborn Press and Guide from Wednesday has his op-ed opinion about homelessness. It's a great story because he actually stayed at a homeless shelter when it was freezing cold one night to see what it was like to be homeless and being sheltered at one of these nonprofit facilities. It wasn't fun. Well, guess what? I've got several opinions here about the worst problem with homelessness, besides the fact that Michigan has a lot of people who are homeless. Have no place to live. No place to live. Okay? Mostly through no fault of their own. No, they're not druggies and they're not criminals. Most of them are good, average people who have lost their jobs and can't find another one, and therefore they lose their car and they lose their home. So they're on the streets. But the worst problem is homeless children. And there's a lot of homeless children. Guess what? Michigan ranks in the bottom half of all the states nationally in care for homeless children. This is from Bridge Magazine, that is the Center for Michigan, bridgemi.com. This story came out just a few days ago, November 20th. Nearly 80,000 Michigan children were homeless in 2013, according to a national report on homeless children and families. 80,000 Michigan children. So we're 37th of 50 states, and 50th is the worst. So we're number 13 or 14, worst in the whole country for how we treat homeless children or the number of homeless children. Oh, it's a composite, though, that includes the number of homeless children, the health of children in poverty, how poor children fare in state and school policy, and planning to deal with the problem. So the report also states the obvious, that homeless children are more likely to be sick, have trouble in school, and experience mental health problems. According to a report by the nonprofit Massachusetts-based National Center on Family Homelessness, up to 25% of homeless preschool children have mental health problems requiring clinical evaluation. The number rises to 40% among homeless school-age children. So, no thanks to Michigan legislature, lame duck or not. Maybe you should do something about this. Maybe you should help out this problem. If you don't have any compassion for grown-ups, and sometimes I doubt that our politicians, Republican and Democrat, do, then what about the kids? You know, Michigan is ranked 30th in affordable housing.